Follow me down this deep, dark hole.
Your monthly podcast, looking at the latest in horror, as well as chatting to the best breaking talent the genre has to offer. In this month's episode, we have a jam-packed show for you. First of all, I will be looking at two new horror releases. The first one being Victor Crowley, the latest entry in Adam Green's Hatchet franchise, while the other is Mom and Dad, the latest feature film from Crank co-director Brian Taylor, starring none other than Nicolas Cage. So those two factors together, you can tell it's going to be a crazy movie. How crazy? You'll just have to listen further to find out. In the second half of the show, we will be chatting to Luchagore co-founder, horror film director, and actress Gigi Saul Guerrero. I must point out that during the interview, the internet connection between Vancouver and Edinburgh was lost, but we did manage to get it back up. It's a very brief thing. It is a very interesting interview. We chat about her latest project, La Quinceañera, as well as upcoming projects, how Luchagore was founded, how they came up with the name, a whole raft of different interesting tidbits for you to listen to. But first up, on with the reviews. As with all the reviews I do on the site, I try to keep spoilers down to a minimum. But as required by law, possibly, I need to give you a spoiler warning, as there will be some minor spoilers in both reviews. Some of you might not like that. For those people, please feel free not to listen. But for everyone else, please tune in and listen to the two reviews you're about to hear. First of which is for Victor Crowley. As mentioned in the intro, it is the fourth film in the Hatchet series. And it also sees Adam Green, the series creator, return to the director's chair. Even though he has written all four films, he did not direct Hatchet 3. Not that that particularly matters, as Victor Crowley largely ignores both Hatchets 2 and 3, taking us back to the original, following the story of the alleged sole survivor of the original film, Andrew Young, played by Parry Shen. Even though in the original film, the character was actually called Sean, but given the outrageous and ridiculous nature of the series, maybe that was a deliberate mistake? I'm not sure. Anyway, we now find Andrew, 10 years later, a D-list, probably Z-list celebrity, touring about, promoting his new book about how he survived the original Honey Island Swamp Massacre from the original movie. Not that anybody believes his story about Victor Crowley. It seems that most people believe that he was the Bayou Butcher and not Victor Crowley. Anyway, he decides, with some persuasion from his agent, to return to the Honey Island Swamp as part of a real crime investigation documentary, which he agrees to because he is offered what he thinks is £1 million. Certainly that is what his agent tells him. It turns out that is not actually true, but that is how we get back to the Honey Island Swamp. We also follow the story of two filmmakers who are going to make a horror film based on the events of the Honey Island Swamp Massacre. As you can probably guess, things go a little bit pear-shaped as Andrew takes a plane back to the swamp, which promptly crashes mid-air. The horror filmmakers accidentally bring Victor back to life by looking up YouTube videos of the voodoo curse that brought him back to life the first time. The silly things people do in horror franchises. Mind you, that is the whole point of these movies. They are a throwback to 80s slashers. They parody and pay loving tribute to those particular movies and the sequels of those particular movies. So the fact that that's a ridiculous plot point, it's meant to be ridiculous. Probably some of the most entertaining moments come from Andrew's agent, played by Felisa Rose, who you may remember as the teenager from the original Sleepaway Camp movie. She plays an amoral, drugged out agent and pretty much lights up every scene she's in and provides most of the film's funniest moments. And it has to be said, this film is not as funny as some of the, well, certainly it's not as funny as the original. There, a lot of the humor falls a bit flat. There's a running joke about how everybody mistakes Andrew as being originally Japanese instead of originally Chinese. And there's a lot of kind of dumb puns and things that are just kind of make you groan rather than laugh, which is a shame because, you know, this started as a very fun franchise and there is still some fun to be had with this movie. But it's probably not as entertaining as certainly the original, although it would, I have to say, it probably is better than its immediate predecessor, Hatchet 3, which was really quite poor. Not only does Felisa Rose star, of course, there's, like with the whole franchise, there is a bunch of faces from horror past, and even faces that have been in this franchise before. There is, for example, a Blinking You Miss It cameo from Tony Todd, the Candyman himself. Even though you believe the character has been forgotten from Hatchet 2 and 3, there is, and this is a spoiler, there is a post-credit sequence that features Danielle Harris as Mary Beth in it. As you would expect from any Adam Green movie, the splatter effects are excellent. He totally rebuffs any CGI, and that really works for, I think it works for horror movies generally, but it really works for this franchise. And, you know, some of the gore effects are pretty brutal, pretty amazing. You know, there's lots of slicing and dicing and decapitations and fountains of blood everywhere. And, you know, fans of the franchise will lap those aspects up, I don't doubt. And even, you know, I was entertained by them for the most part as well. But overall, the story is quite weak, and as I mentioned before, it doesn't hit the funny notes in the same way that the original did. And yeah, I mean, it just kind of, it plods along, you know, the pacing is, it doesn't feel like a fast movie. There's moments where there's a lot of talking and the movie kind of grinds to a halt. And, you know, once the horror kicks in and once the, you know, we're being chased around the woods by Victor Crowley, that's the fun part of the movie. But there's a large part of the movie that, you know, we're stuck in this plane, crash plane, and we're watching the cast bickering back and forward. And, you know, all that stuff's not very interesting. And it certainly might be more interesting if the level of acting was better. But yeah, it's not it's not the best level of acting you'll see. I mean, you know, for a low budget horror movie, it's on par, you know, but overall it could have been trimmed in that respect, or just, you know, which is odd because it is only an 83 minute movie. It might sound like I'm being really down on this film. I'm not really down on this film. I think that there's been very few kind of iconic slasher villains to appear in the last couple of decades. And, you know, Victor Crowley is an entertaining monster. Well played, if you can say well played, as he doesn't speak, but by Kane Hodder, who has mastered the art of being a silent hulking monster, you know, from obviously, you know, his time as Jason, you know, and in here and in other movies, and I'm sure he'll be just as entertaining in the upcoming Death House, which has been labeled the Expendables of horror. But anyway, back to this movie. Overall, if you're looking for something on a Saturday night to pass a little bit of time that has excellent splatter effects, you know, it's certainly passable in those regards. But overall, not the greatest of movies. I would say I would give it maybe a 5.5 out of 10, but yeah, nothing more than that. It's nothing special, which is a shame because I, you know, generally like Adam Green's work, and I will continue to watch his films going forward. But anyway, on to the next film, Mum and Dad, which is written and directed by Brian Taylor, who is still most famous for co-directing the two Crank films, which you may remember if you are an action fan, and stars Nicolas Cage and Selma Blair as the eponymous mum and dad. It has, I've received somewhat mixed reviews when it premiered in the States, but it also, to be fair, seemed to win over audiences when it made its premiere at the Toronto International Film Festival. The basic premise is that mums and dads across America have suddenly, due to possibly a virus, possibly some sort of weird transmission, who knows, have turned on their children and have gone feral and want to kill their kids. Only their own kids, though. They don't want to kill anybody else, just purely their own progeny. This is certainly an interesting premise, and in better hands, in better writing hands, this could have been more interesting and complex than this film is, but there is a lot of fun to this film. That said, the initial setup isn't that promising. It seems to go through a variety of family sitcom cliches. We have Nicolas Cage as the man going through the midlife crisis. We have a bratty teenage daughter. We have an annoying, mischievous younger son. And we have Selma Blair as a bored housewife who fills her time with fitness classes and the like. Once the virus first hits, we see waves of parents waiting at the school gates to kill their kids, although obviously we initially do not know this is what's going to happen. We just sense that something bad is about to happen. And some of these initial scenes are quite effective. They're certainly when the flock of parents burst through the school gates and chase after their children across football fields and the like, that there's certainly some fun to that. But in the first half of the film, there seems to be a lot of confusion with the filmmakers in terms of tone, of how dark do they want to take this, how much horror do they want in this movie? Is this a knockabout movie that's playing all this violence for laughs? Is it cartoonish, or is it a gritty movie, something that's trying to make social points and make points about family dynamics or something like that? And it never quite settles on a tone initially. It goes back and forth of how dark it wants to be and how silly it wants to be. There's moments, even there's a particular moment in a delivery room, a hospital delivery room, where one of the characters, the Selma Blair's sisters in the movie, is delivering a baby, and there's a very violent scene there, which the scene itself visually is very dark and very nasty, but the soundtrack suggests that this is something of a comical scene. And then, you know, and these sorts of contrasts keep happening again and again within the first half of the movie, and it's very confusing as an audience member to know exactly what the intention was and how we were supposed to feel, whether we were supposed to feel shocked or whether we were supposed to just go along with it and guffaw along with it. It's never entirely established until the second half of the movie. Now, as I said, the first half of the movie is very uneven. The writing is not the strongest, and Nicolas Cage does not appear for most of the first half of the movie. He just kind of flits in and out. He seems almost like a side character in this movie, you know, despite the fact that in the trailer and all the posters, he's heavily advertised as one of the lead stars. You might think this is a good thing, you know, if Nicolas Cage tends to divide opinions in those respects. However, and I'm going to out myself here, despite his often horrible filmography, I'm an ardent Cage defender. And in this movie could definitely do with more Cage. And this is proven by the second half of the movie, where Nicolas Cage is allowed to do his Nicolas Cage thing and go completely batshit crazy. When him and Selma Blair's character are hunting down the kids, that's when the movie kicks in. That's when it becomes fun. That's when you realize, okay, they nail the tone in the second half of it being purely a black comedy. I mean, it could be nothing else, as several characters come back from what should be fatal or near fatal wounds with barely a scratch on them. The best example of this, and this is a spoiler, so close your ears if you don't want to hear it, the best example of this is Nicolas Cage surviving a gas explosion with not even real burns, just like a kind of cartoon kind of black ash, bit of black ash on his face, you know, nothing, barely a scratch on him, which is, it's quite amusing. But he is not the only character who is possibly indestructible in this movie. There is also the aforementioned teenage daughter's boyfriend is horribly mangled in the second half of this movie, and yet keeps bouncing back somehow. That's completely miraculous. But this is when, like I said, this is when the movie gets good and we realize we're in a cartoonish universe and anything can happen, and it's all blood and maiming and explosions, and you know, nothing has any real effect, you know, and you can just go along with it. And for what it is, you know, that's quite fun. I think there's a lot of enjoyment in the second half of this movie, particularly again this is a spoiler, so don't listen if you don't want any of that. There is a later cameo from Lance Henriksen. I won't tell you actually what where this comes up, but there is a later cameo from Lance Henriksen, and he is also excellent in the role he plays. And just the kind of mad chasing around the house, all that is just really fun to watch, and it's really entertaining. And if you're looking for something where you can switch your brain off on a Friday or Saturday night, this could be the movie for you. And if you want to see some classic cage scenery chewing, then this definitely could be a fun night out for people. And actually, I should mention also that not only Cage is great at the scenery chewing in this movie, I should also give props to Selma Blair, who's also a good actress and also somebody I like, who is, you know, plays all sweetness and light in the first half, and like when the second half really kicks in and they're really trying to hunt down these kids, she holds her own, and she is not quite as crazy as Nicolas Cage, but that's a tall order for anyone, but certainly is nearly matches him, and she's really fun in this movie as well. Overall, it's a mixed bag. It's very much a film of two halves, which is a horrible cliche, but it goes along with the movie in terms of the similar cliches in the movie. And it really lets fly in the second half. And that's why I'm going to give this one about a 6 out of 10. I would say, you know, if you want something that's just fun and breezy, and you don't want to think about anything, you don't want any movie that's going to get under your skin or has a message or anything like that, then you might want to check it out. Otherwise, maybe just let this one pass by. Anyway, that's the reviews done. That's the review portion done of the show. And now, on to my guest, Gigi Sol Guerrera.
Well, hello, Gigi. It's nice to meet you. Welcome to New Horror Express.
Thanks for having me. Nice to meet you, too.
It's no problem. I suppose the obvious talking point to start with is your latest web series that you've done, La Quinceañera. Is that right?
That was really good pronunciation, man. You get like 5 gold points right there.
Thank you very much. So that's something you've been doing. I saw it recently got its world premiere at the Morbido Film Festival, where it won an audience award, and it's going to be coming up on Stage 13, that's right?
Yeah, so basically Stage 13 is a Warner Brothers division. So it's a new, fresh digital network by Warner Brothers, and all their short... they're like short form series that they make. So it's more like on the go, like, I don't want to say mobile, but it's just faster, shorter series that you can just quickly watch and move on since everybody's lives are so busy, right? and as of right now, our show has bigger news than expected. That's as much as I can tell you from just airing online. So in the first quarter of this year, we have some really big announcements to share about La Quinceañera. And I'm super excited. Like, I can't even express to you how excited I am and surprised of how things ended up turning out. So it's going to be super great. It's going to stream in a digital platform. I just can't really say where yet.
You can't really give any details right now.
Yeah, not yet, but very soon. Like, I'm really excited. So I think the world's going to love it, and I'm pretty sure Luchagor fans are going to be super excited about it. It's very different from everything we've made. It's got more story. It's very dramatic and gory at the same time. Like, it's still the Latin horror we are known for, but it's just more in depth, and it's 7 episodes, and we really went hardcore on it, and I just can't wait for our audiences to see this one.
Yeah, it does seem like, from the trailer I saw of it, and one of the early reviews from the film festival premiered that, that seems to be the word, that it is a bit different. It's a bit more psychological. It's a bit maybe less harsh than graphic than some of the stuff you're known for. Would that be right?
Yeah. It is a lot less graphic, a lot less gory. We focused a lot more on the storytelling aspect through character development. So, you know, it was a good learning experience that you don't always have to show all the gore. It really can be just as scary when it's in your mind, right? Like when it's the less you see, the more you imagine, right?
Yeah.
And the topic is already very, it is already very delicate because it has to do with narcos, you know, from our country, from Mexico. It has to do a lot with that kind of violence towards women. So it's already a very, you know, delicate thing to portray. But at the same time, my goal was to not just be about that. Like it's about the strength of becoming a woman. Like that's what the story really is about, and defending for your family. But the situation that these characters are put on is stuff you unfortunately see in Mexico and in the world in general. So
I can understand why you would have to portray that in a more sensitive style rather than some of the grindhouse stuff that you've done in the past.
Very much. Yeah, exactly. And also it takes place during a girl's quinceañera, which is a very big tradition for us Mexicans, right? It's when a girl turns 15, so it's the night she becomes a woman. So La Quinceañera, the show, still portrays so much of our culture and so much of the richness of family and our morals. So you're right. I had to be very careful in my choices because I could potentially offend somebody, right? But I mean, we live in a world that everybody's offended by everything now. So you kind of have to get used to just expecting the unexpected, right?
That's something that's interesting. Do people get offended by your stuff?
All the time.
It's a lot of your horror is very hardcore, and also it's, you know, it's blood, it's guts, it's babes, and you know, as a woman yourself, do you get any blowback or pushback from women saying like, is that, you know, a good thing, or is that something you just ignore?
You know what? That's a good question. I get asked similar stuff all the time, and like with this whole movement about women in film and not enough female directors and all that, I don't want to say I ignore it, but I have to just keep working hard for myself, right? And I have to accept that the situation is a little bit harder for me as a female, but I can't let it get to me. I can't complain about it. You know, I have to just keep going. I have to push myself. You know what? If I'm a chick in this business, then that just means it's an obstacle I have to overcome, just like every filmmaker has obstacles, but mine is a different one. So the only thing I can do is work harder. And I strongly believe in just good storytelling. Doesn't matter if you have a female lead or male lead and you want to prove a point, you know, all that crap. It's just make a good story. If it's a female lead, great. If it's a guy lead, great. But make it good because that's the way it was supposed to be. Not forcing a female lead for the sake of it, you know. And I find a few of my films have offended people because not just for its graphicness or that I twist a lot of Mexican culture into it, but it's just who I am, right? Like I consider myself my own, and that's what I want to portray on film. So, you know, if most of my stuff is with male leads, it's just because I felt that that's the way it should be told, you know. And and this quinceañera story, it's all strong women in it, but that's how I felt with should be, you know, not forcing any of it. And I think that's where things get more successful, when things become more organic on a story and they're not forced a certain way.
Yeah, to fit into a certain agenda, just let the story grow kind of naturally. That's yeah. That's I definitely agree with that. That's the I would say that that's the best way to go, to just follow your own muse and to see what the story needs strength wise.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with that more. And I just subject talking about, you know, being, because yeah, it is really hard, but I feel that we as women complain too much about it. Instead, just go out there and do it, right? If it's hard, so what? Then there's nothing stopping you but yourself, right? Stopping you but yourself. So you just have to go out and keep going. So I really hope that that mentality can inspire others to just do the same. Because there's so many talented girls out there, and there's so many untold stories that we should hear and watch, but we just can't be afraid of failure, right? So.
That absolutely makes a lot of sense. And there is definitely been a lot of, a kind of very positive flowering of a lot of female horror filmmakers, especially in the last 5 years. With the Sosa sisters and Jill Gavrizagin and I can't remember her name right now, but the woman who made A Girl Who Walks Alone, Home Alone at Night. And
Bad of Batch. Course.
Anna Amapur, that's her name. And so many others as well.
Mm-hmm. Agree more. And I think that's the beauty about social media too. The way we can meet people now, it's so much easier. And just how to connect with other filmmakers. We are very lucky to live at this time. Because I have that, if it wasn't through Facebook and Twitter or Instagram, I wouldn't know any of them. I think, for example, Jill, who's super, super talented, I've only met her in person once. And that was after having her on Facebook for 3 years, you know, like, I think that's the beauty of it now. You can support others and meet others just through social media. It's so great. It's so great. And not only that, but genre community, like the horror community is the best. It's the most passionate fans. Like at the end of the day, we're all fans of the same thing, but horror just has the best and most dedicated fan base there is. So it really is such a great community to be part of and find out everybody's work around the world. So I love it.
Yeah, and there definitely seems to be more, as a big horror fan myself, obviously there seems to be more and more horror film festivals popping up all the time.
Yeah, that's
here
true.
In the UK. Where I'm based.
Yeah, there's a lot more, not just more genre festivals, but also they're being a lot more recognized. Like now entering Sieges or Fantasia, Fantastic Fest, like now it's an actual big deal. It's like, wow, it's like Cannes for horror, you know? Like people actually really recognize it. And I think that's a huge step for genre. That's great. Slowly, slowly it's getting there, but it's worth it at the end.
Yeah, and it definitely seems like horror is having a real moment at the moment. You know, Get Out was one of the most talked about films of last year. It just seems like there's more and more great horror coming out and being talked about and being given the props it deserves, in where previously critics might have been a bit sniffy towards the genre.
Yeah, it's very true, but I mean, at the end of the day, it's one of the ones that makes the most money.
Yeah. Right?
Like it's the easiest type of film to make money back. I think it's just, it sells so much easier and you can make it for cheap. So
yeah, absolutely. I was while doing some research for this interview, I was looking on your website, and I was surprised that you were only founded in 2013. As you seem to have been, Luchagor is a name I seem to have heard for a long time now as a horror fan, and even some of your shorts, possibly your most famous short, El Gigante, I felt like I saw that like a while back, but again, that's only 2014, and you've really seemed to have marked a place out for yourself in the horror terrain in what is actually a very short time, or roughly.
Yeah, no, it really is that short of a time that we've come out in the world. It was just straight out of film school. We were like, you know what, we should do this. Like, it also was really inspiring, feeling a little bit like the underdogs in school for Luke Bramley and myself. We were the only ones super into horror and the only ones wanting to do that in our class. Everybody was suicide films, like comedy, like the usual, right?
And
it was really tricky because nobody wanted to work on our projects for some reason. I don't know why. I think horror is super cool. It was really hard to post. I think being put in a position like that with not really having much help made us want to make it more, you know? So for our film school project, one of our graduation projects, we did a show called Choose Your Victim, web series where the audience can vote who dies next and we pick how. Like, people would submit their deaths and we would pick the coolest one, and that's what we would shoot. So it was a really cool idea, and we finished the show and didn't sleep for 4 months to make it happen, but everything we had to learn by making that little show, it's on our website too. You can tell it was the first thing we ever made. It's got its flaw a bit, but it was after that we were like, okay, we should be a name. We should be something. You know, we weren't Luchagor yet. We just pretty much out that, okay, this is what we want to do. So from there, the first official Luchagor short was our first viral hit in 60 seconds.
Yeah.
And that just helped us. And then I always highly run into so many people starting out, just do videos that are trending. At the time, there was a local competition of making a fake trailer. And at the exact same time, The New Dead was coming out. So it was kind of like, okay, everybody's talking about Evil Dead, we should make a fake trailer to Evil Dead, you know? So it was a very easy way to just get your foot in the door, because everybody was in Evil Dead mode, right?
Yeah.
So that helped us a lot. And it was hard work. It was hard work to get Luchagor out there. It's really cool that you feel like it's been around for a long time when it really hit. I think just the fact that we didn't stop filming, didn't stop creating, made it seem like we've been around, because we have 18 shorts or something like that, you know? And I think that's super important when you're starting out a brand. You just can't stop making stuff, no matter how little it is, right?
Yeah.
Your work out there is easy. And I highly encourage it. It's easy. Facebook's free. YouTube's free. Get it out there, right? Like, get people to watch your stuff.
That seems like an excellent business model. And yeah, you certainly got a lot of shorts under your belt in a very short time. Who came up with the Luchagor name? Was that you, or was that Luke, or?
I really wish it was me, but it was the whitest guy in our team. It was Luke. It's funny because he thought of the name even before Choose Your Victim. It was kind of when him and I started becoming friends and making little horror projects for homework. And he was like, I remember it clearly during theory class, which was a super boring class. He just like tapped on my shoulder and was like, hey, I have a name. I was like, okay, what is it? He's like, what do you think of Lucha Gore? Because he's like the pun master. That's what we call him, because he's super, he's really into dad jokes, like bad right. ones. So right. when he tells jokes, they're very enthusiastic, right? So he's like, Lucha Gore. And I was like, what? And he's like, you know, instead of luchador, it's Lucha Gore, right? And I just looked at him with a shut up face. And I totally told him, I totally said, that sucks. And I turned around and kept doing my
you
work.
You totally hated it at first.
I totally hated it for 2 years until we made Evil Dead. And I was like, okay, we need a name. Or just before Evil Dead, I was like, okay, we need a sick name, right? We can't be just YouTube name, right? And I asked him, I was like, hey, Luke, what was that name you said 2 years ago in class that I hated? And he's like, oh, you mean Lucha Gore? And it just sparked in my head, like, Lucha Gore Productions. That's it. Great job, Luke. I love it. That's what we'll be called. And I swear he hated me for 2 days. He was like, what? But, you know, it's a really good name. I don't know why I didn't like it, but I think it's a perfect name.
Yeah, I think it's a great name as well. As somebody who both likes wrestling and horror, I think it's an excellent name.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm a big fan of luchador, luchadores. Like, I'm a really fan. My dad would always take me to see those matches when I was a kid back in Mexico. I loved it so much. So El Gigante, I think, is the best representation of our work. It really feels very luchador, like very visceral Latin horror. So I always tell people, if you really want to know what luchador is, you know, El Gigante definitely is the one to piggyback on, right? And check us out with.
In this stage, it seems almost like your mascot, you know, this is kind of your symbolic character.
Yeah, it totally is. It totally is. I even love the guy. His name's Dale. He's made our website and a lot of our online press.
Yeah.
And even when you go to our website at luchagoreproductions.com, instead of the little colorful wheel for the waiting, right, when something's loading.
No, oh, there's a little Street Fighter luchador guy.
It's a little dancing luchador, like an 8-bit luchador. Awesome. Yeah. It's like the perfect. Oh my gosh. Sorry, I don't know why I brought that up, but it makes me super happy every time.
This is a very cool feature on your website, so this is fair enough to bring it up.
Thank you.
It's okay. Well, I think a lot of people will probably be wondering, if they are into your work, if there will finally be an El Gigante feature movie at some point. So,
oh man, that's still our dream, you know, something we want to fight for. But at the end of the day, the reason why we haven't been so lucky in making it is I think we want too much money for it. But I think a movie like that deserves a good budget. The world building in just the short film was a lot of work. And it's our most expensive short yet. So I think if it's worth the wait, we'll just have to pull a Martin Scorsese on it, right? And make it till there's an opportunity. Because we could have made it. I think we could have made it last year, but it would have been with not even half the budget of what we would hope for, which is still very little. And then we would settle for something so small and potentially risk the project, right? When it could go full potential and full insanity.
Of course.
Yeah, so right now we actually... we've been working for 5 months with our writer Shane on on a new script, on a new feature that we actually just finished last week. So, wow. Yeah. So, and
can you reveal anything about
our
that?
Goal? Yeah, I can talk a little bit about it. So our goal is to make a feature regardless, but a much cheaper one. One that we can just go ahead and make it on our own, even if we don't get funding for it. So it's more based on resources we have for free, locations we can get for free, using minimal actors, like 5 or less, you know, like that kind of deal, where we can just literally go out and make something great. So that's already pretty challenging, because you want to make a story that doesn't scream low budget, right? You still want to make something that it, you can't even tell it's low budget, even though it's got less characters than a bigger budget film, or it's less locations or whatever, right? And so El Gigante's feature is still there. It's still waiting for us to be made, but instead, it's there. Like, El Gigante is there for whenever that opportunity rises.
Yeah.
But it's just easier to make something cheaper. Because the thing is that a lot of filmmakers don't know, and I didn't know, it's actually really hard to get funding for a feature when you don't have a feature. So here's $3 million for El Gigante. It's not that easy, because they're like, okay, where's another feature? You know, where's can make something good? Right?
Yeah.
So this is also a feature that we wrote that will be that window to help us get funding for bigger projects. We need it. And Rainer started, our other co-founder, Rainer started this hashtag that's no more shorts, because we have way too many when we could have made a feature by now. But you know what? Making shorts is a great practice. It's a great practice. Gets you back on your feet in a quick turnaround, and you have a story to tell right away. So I think it's time now to focus and put all our strengths into a
making
El Gigante after that, right? And who knows? Maybe when the La Quinceañera comes out, that's going to open lots of doors too. Right? Like, I think that's going to be like, oh, wow, you guys made a show for Warner Brothers. Let's watch it. Okay, take my money. Right? Like,
well, yeah, I mean, that's...
But what's going to happen when all this stuff comes out? So. Oh, sorry, I totally interrupted you. What was that?
No, it's perfectly fine. I was just... All that I was saying was, you know, because it's...
Hello?
Oh, sorry, we lost the connection there. I think when we left off, we were talking about your show, your new show, and how this might provide the publicity needed to get funding for an El Gigante movie.
So as I was saying, at the end of the if you want to make features, you have to make one. that's the overall message that, you know, that I've learned of why it's been so hard to get El Gigante out off the ground, but it's worth it. I think it's a blessing in disguise, you know.
Yeah.
It makes you work harder, and that's how you learn, right? So we were able to pitch El Gigante everywhere. Like, we pitched it everywhere and it got a lot of praise, but at the end of the day, you know, we need a feature to to get so much funding for one, right? Some people get lucky, you know, there's some people just discovered in different ways. We got discovered by Warner Brothers, you know, to make a series. So it's not too bad. So we just have to make a feature regardless right now. So the working title is just called Toxic. I hate the title, but that's because we don't have one yet. So we're just calling it Toxic for now. And
is there any connection to the plot there, or is it that just the name you gave it for now?
Oh no, there's connections. That's why it's such a bad title, because it gives away literally everything. or it doesn't give away anything, but it's like, it's too like, here's what it's about, you know, kind of title.
You want something less on the nose.
Less on the nose, a little more creative. But for the first time ever, we don't have a title right away. For some reason, like everything we've made, we've had a title like, it's going to be called this, and it's going to be about that. And we just know, but this one, like, it's a tough title because it's like, we want it to be so interesting. But as much as I can tell you, it takes place on a boat. So that's really exciting. So it all takes place on a boat, like 80% of the movie.
All right.
So I'm super excited. Yeah, I love it, and it's an all male cast, so that breaks that stereotype, right?
Yeah. So there can be no final girl.
I'm really excited. No final girl. So, and directed by a girl. All male cast or a girl. So that should be super cool. But the story is badass. So I wish I could tell you more, but I will once funding happens, because if it doesn't, I wanna figure out if we really can make it. I think we can. I think we totally will. And
I sent it to
the Luchagor core. Yeah, I just sent it to the core team of Luchagor 3 days ago, like just the day after Christmas. I was like, Christmas.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God. And everyone's super excited. They're like, Gigi, let's make this. I'm like, let me find money first. You know, but that's Rainer's job. So I'll let him stress a little bit.
You just concentrate on the creative stuff.
Exactly. So yeah, Shane and I have been working hard on it for a good 5-6 months. And I think it's ready to go out in the world and find its time to be made. So, because I really want to make El Gigante. At the end of everything is for that chance to make El Gigante feature.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, I would definitely be interested to see an El Gigante film. The short is excellent. I'm a big fan of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and it also reminds me a lot of House of a Thousand Corpses and that kind of stuff. And
yeah, awesome, man. Thank you.
Well, I think we've covered most of what I was planning to talk about today with you. So I will wrap it up now. Is there anything you want to, in social media, you want to shout out for like listeners so people can find you? I mean, I'm sure most people know where you're at, but just in case.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, people can totally find Luchagor Productions on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. We're always posting new stuff, and definitely, you know, I want people to stay tuned for all the insane quinceañera announcements coming up in the first quarter of the year, which is super soon. I'm so excited. I don't think people understand my excitement, but it's because I
think people listening to this will be very understanding how excited you are.
Yeah.
And I'm excited for you.
Yay! Thank you. No, I'm. I really can't wait, and I think it's gonna be available in countries than I expected. At first, I thought it was just gonna be the U.S., but it's actually gonna be way more. So that's awesome, and as for anything else, you know, we're always making stuff, and the Capcom game that I was writing, I've delivered everything just before Christmas, so hopefully I will be hearing from that game at the end of this year. Everyone will know what I was making for them, so I'm really excited about that too.
That sounds very exciting. You know, certainly got a lot of talents the director, game designer, actress as well. You got a bunch of credits. I recently saw a very entertaining trailer for a film called Puppet Killer, which I see you're in.
Yeah, thank you. That was a lot of fun, that film. I had a really good time and made some really nice friends out of that movie too. So I hope it comes out soon. We shot that a while ago, so I don't even think I look like that anymore, but but it should be really cool to watch that soon. I'm glad that the people who put it together were able to put it out in the world. Like I completely understand how hard it is to get something off the ground, right? And just make everything so independent. Yeah. I totally understand the struggle. So I'm really happy for them.
Well, that sounds really good. Well, it's been great having you on the show. And I look forward to seeing this feature you've got coming out, the film that's not going to be called Toxic.
Exactly. I promise it won't be called that. But you're the first person to even hear the name. So you're the first lucky one to hear me express anything about it.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, I will definitely seek that out when it comes out. And, I'll have you on the show again, especially if you ever visit Edinburgh, if you bring it to the Dead by Dawn Festival or the Edinburgh Film Festival.
Oh, I'd love that. I'd love that. If you can email us the link to the festival, well, I'll definitely check it out.
Yeah, absolutely. I can. Yeah, I'll absolutely do that. Okay.
Thank you.
No problem.
Well, we'll stay in contact. Next time we'll have the Luchagor boys join the chat too.
Excellent. So you can, enjoy that.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much, Scott, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, Gigi.
Well, that was my guest, Gigi Sol Guerrera there. As you can tell from the Happy New Year's at the end of the interview, this was recorded way back at the start of the year, but is only coming to you now. I think, though, that it was worth the wait. If you agree, please feel free to like, share, and subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher. Or head on over to our Facebook page, give that a like, follow us on Twitter. However, that is all for another month of New Horror Express. Be sure to tune in next month where we have a literary special.